parented. Give us a call. It's a call and radio show, 895-1114. Or you could also message us on the Facebook page. I'll be doing my best to get messages through there. But first, before we get started, we are going to be listening to some music to get us in the mood, which is Sister Sledge, We Are Family. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the Urban Design Solar, a fully licensed and bonded contractor in energy retrofitting and solar installations. If your business is pumping water for ag use, Urban Design Solar wants you to know that there are federal grants that will greatly reduce your energy costs by installing solar. More information by calling Urban Design Solar at 345-0005 or visit UrbanDesignChico.com. Of this world's delight, high hopes we have for the future and our goals in sight. We know we don't get depressed. Here's what we call our golden rule. Have faith in you and the things you do. All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Love in the 21st Century, and we are talking about love and parenting. Thank you so much, Kelly, for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me, Tammy.
Absolutely. So, again, if you have some insight to share with us, please give us a call. 895-1114 is the number. And the reason I invited Kelly here tonight to talk about parenting is because we are collaborating on a project that has to do, I think, a lot with the children that are growing up in our community and really the community of our world and sort of the new challenges that lie ahead of us in terms of not keeping our children in a certain mindset, but allowing them an opportunity to see things differently than the modern media creates for children these days, especially if they are being put into public schools or being raised by televisions and or just around a lot of friends that are in those environments. So that inspired me to invite Miss Kelly Munson to join me because she's definitely a change agent in our community and has been advocating for many different things across the board that has inspired community here in Chico and beyond in Dubuque County. And she is a proud mother of two, right?
Yes, of two.
Awesome. So I want to just jump into maybe talking a little bit about you as a mother. So could you share what your role is as a mother? Like, how many kids do you have? You said two. Like,
yep, I have two wonderful kids. Avery is my firstborn. He is just turned 12 years old. And my daughter, Ander, is 10 and a half. So they're about 18 months apart. And it's been interesting thinking about my role, especially in the last few years, because they're no longer babies, toddlers, even young children. They're moving into young adolescents. And I see the role changing as they go through those stages. Like, certainly in the early years, being a vessel for this being in the world, and just giving them love and affection and nurturing and keeping them safe. And then in their earlier years, being, a caretaker of this vulnerable person in the world and helping cultivate their vitality in the world, their sense of aliveness and wonder, and helping them find happiness as a child, which is definitely a privilege that we have here. And then now, as they're turning into young adolescents, seeing myself more as one of many mentors, and that seeing I definitely have gifts to offer them and teachings to offer them, and so does my partner, and that we only hold a small container, and what kids and young adults and adults need to thrive. We're trying to bring in as many fellow community members and grandparents and peers for them as possible, so they get a more well-rounded experience in the world.
Absolutely. So, coming from my perspective, so I don't have any children.
Yeah.
I do work a lot with children. And from my perspective, I have a lot of experiential knowledge working in the classroom, and then educational knowledge through school of studying child development. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was always really surprising to me is the level of understanding of development of children. Mm-hmm. And whether that's, you know, for school teachers when they're teaching students, or for parents in general. And so I'm kind of curious, like, with your own experience, if it was something that you had, you know, more knowledge about before you became a parent, or was it just something that you learned as you went?
Well, I don't know if I had ever changed a diaper before I had kids. I definitely had babysat and things like that, but it wasn't, I didn't grow up as a young girl in the society saying, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to get married and have a white picket fence and children. And I was a little bit more of a tomboy, and I was involved in the outdoors and learning and just, you know, experiencing the world. So, wasn't that we weren't trying either. So it was a little bit of a just kind of nature took its course.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as my experience has been more in the realm of human dynamics and group development, both my husband and I worked on ropes courses and backcountry wilderness self-development programs. We both teach leadership and group dynamics. So we understand a lot about how different people work together, and especially in group contexts and leadership. And I see a lot of that relating to children, how they grow up in the world. So being able to identify their strengths, seeing that they have different styles, have their styles differ than me and my partner's styles, and being able to see people as them as individuals and cultivate their strengths and their natural temperaments that they come into the world with. So that was one thing. And then I would say in the past years, I've been really turned on to a few other people that are not traditional child development folks in like the psychology books and things like that. And Bill Plotkin and John Young are two of those folks, and they work a lot with rites of passage work and how like the soul and the inner person develops. And I think that that is something that's missing in our modern youth child development matrix, is the role of nature connection and the role of spiritual, soulful development for children so they can grow into healthy adults and healthy elders.
Absolutely. And that's something that I want to talk about a little bit here soon as rites of passage, because that is something that I'm very passionate about, mm-hmm. and something that will be tying into the Weaving Women's Wisdom, which we'll be mentioning here soon. But I want to go back a little bit and talk about what you were saying as your role as a mother, what you felt was your, you know, to create a vessel of security. That's kind of what is sticking out for me. Is there mm-hmm. something that, you know, what was your, would you say that was your main function as you were, I mean, the many roles that mothers play, mm-hmm. but like what you felt was your anchoring rod for your children of what you were trying to create? Would there be one thing that would sum that up for you? Would that be creating that vessel of security, or is there something else?
Definitely, yeah, the security, and then letting them be who they want to be and not trying to shape them too much. I don't know if they've summed that up in a theory, but
right.
when they start developing tastes for foods, to let them eat those foods. When they developed when they decided they wanted to wear certain things, letting them wear those things. I've tried not to put them in a box and mm-hmm. let them express themselves. So I guess, like, you know, versus a cultivated garden, letting it be a wild garden and a more natural garden, if for a metaphor there.
Right.
Finding out what they're passionate about and then feeding those passions, even as a small child. You know, my kids are pretty different. My son is definitely more conservative in a sense, and my daughter, she's more like in his mind, and my daughter's more in her body. She's very kinesthetic. So trying to find family activities that is in service to both of their ways of being in the world, instead of always trying to do one or the other. So yeah, just cultivating their own wildness and their own unique nature.
Has that ever come up, you know, kind of come up to an edge, in the sense that, like, being a parent, I guess an example comes to mind when I was a preschool teacher, and we would, you know, asking the kids to put their shoes on, and mm-hmm. they'd be like, well, why do I have to put my shoes on? And it's like, because I asked you to put your shoes on. And having to explain to them the concept that sometimes, like, right now I have time to explain to you why this mm-hmm. needs to happen. And I feel like in what you're explaining, that cultivating of that wildness, that cultivating of that uniqueness, that the explanations are really important. It's really important to take the time to let children know why you're doing something. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's not time for explanations. Like, there is a now, and it needs to happen. And so I'm wondering, like, as being a parent, has that, you know, that sort of like, okay, when I say that this needs to happen, it needs to happen, has that been...
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. We haven't had too many battles so far. I think that that you really captured it in having the conversations. We have a lot of conversations with our kids, and a lot of apologies to them at times. And, you know, I know when I've made some what I would perceive to be mistakes, being able to go back and say to my child, like, hey, I'm really sorry, like, that didn't come out right the way I said that, or I really wanted to explain what I meant, you know, when I said no or this or that. So seeing them as, I don't know, capable of having those conversations, and so that's been a piece of it. And certainly telling them that sometimes, yeah, we need to do things because we need to be there in 10 minutes, or this is required by school. That's a part of our family culture too, is sometimes we do things for the health of the family or the health of the experience, or because we've been asked to, and other times we don't. Other times we get to be more authentic, you know, or different. So there's a balance there, and not just a balance, there's more of a dance there. And so being able to be aware of the whole and the good and the health of the whole, and also aware of the what individual needs. So we talk about that.
When would you say that you started having more in-depth conversations with your children about just general things that you needed to have them do? Because I feel like that's not necessarily a a super common thing that I see with general parenting. Like some of the more conscious parents that I do know that are deliberate with the conversations they have, I think it's kind of a newer trend. So in general, when, you know, would you think that these conversations start to bud?
You know, I think it varies per child. Certainly my son, who again I mentioned is more in his mind, he and I have, and my husband too, have been having deeper conversations for several years, and partially because he started asking deeper questions.
Right.
You know, about death or about, you know, how babies have come to be, or like some how does the sky work. And so he's a little bit more like that, where my daughter, again, is just more in her body, and we have less deeper conversations with her because she doesn't typically ask about them. So it's more of us sharing her our reasons for things or our desires. So again, it's just really looking for the cues of each child. So I would say my daughter, you asked about time. Maybe my son, when he was maybe around 7 or 8, it started around then. And then my daughter, maybe more 9, 8, 9, a little bit later for her.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of mentioned a few things. I'm watching your daughter dance outside.
Oh.
So you did mention a few things about the differences in like learning styles, possibly with your son and your daughter. Were there any other developmental differences that you noticed, like as they grew up?
Oh yeah, like, you know, it's interesting. You can track these things once they're a few years in to when they were very, very young. And I remember my son at like 6 months when he started eating solid food. Like he didn't really like to get like food on him, or he wasn't ever like a he played in the mud, but not like just a little bit. Whereas my daughter, you know, at 6 or so months when she started eating some solid foods, like she would just like spread food on her, you know, she would like all over her face. When she would like paint, she would paint naked and paint her body, you know, when she was like 2 or 3. So she's just a more tactile person, and she can hardly sit at the dinner table. She likes to get up and move or stand up or come and go from the table sometimes, where my son will sit down and eat and clear his plate and be done. So I can notice things all the way back from when they were infants.
Right.
It's really fascinating to watch.
And so when you say that your son sits down at the table and your daughter, you know, tends to come and go, is that just, you know, one of those things, like you said, of cultivating the wild and uniqueness of each child? Like you don't necessarily expect that they're going to both do the same thing, like even if it's
yeah.
a certain time that you're all doing something together?
Yeah, and she can certainly sit at the table, but she, yeah, she's not as much of a linear person. She's...
I guess what I'm getting at is like there isn't like a requirement for her to sit at the table. I guess I'm thinking of my own upbringing, and it's like we sat at the table. Like even if my parents were sitting at the table, we sat at the table, and we sat there until we asked to be excused.
Yeah,
and we asked to be excused, and so there, you know, there was a whole process around it. I mean, I now as an adult don't sit at a table, but
yeah.
So I, you know, there's just kind of like that culture and the etiquette that maybe is of a time's past.
Oh,
but I guess that's
right,
kind
yeah.
of what I'm getting at. When you're talking about cultivating that wildness, you're allowing like that, you're just kind of seeing beyond that isn't her nature to do that. And so instead of forcing her and starting an argument over something that you know is intrinsically not in alignment for her,
right.
you just allow her to.
Yeah, I think definitely considering time and place, like the context. If we were at a nice restaurant or, you know, having guests, I would ask her to, you know, to stay at the table till everybody's done. But at home or when we're in a more casual setting, I'm okay with that. So again, that's that going back to having that conversation with the kids and being aware of others, like who else is here and what's the setting. And, you know, at school, there's some agreements that you make by going to school. And I've chosen to send my kids to school. So what are the agreements and the expectations of the teacher there, and, you know, expecting them to go along with them, or else to share why they don't want to do something and have a voice in that and have a conversation about it. So, yeah, I'm not a, like, consistent every time, every place, same rules. Yeah, it's situational, and teaching the kids to be really aware of the situation and the context too.
Absolutely. A lot of presence. I like it. So if you're just tuning in, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, and we are talking with Kelly Munson, local change agent and mother of two, about love and parenting. And if you have any insights you'd like to add about your own experiences, give us a call, 895-1114. So a couple things that are coming to mind for me, Kelly, before we segue into some other topics, is, you know, the state of the world today and having children, because I think that's an often thing that comes up with myself, you know, with myself not having children and my friends that don't have children. Like, the concept of even having children sort of seems overwhelming. Not simply for the fact of having children, because that seems overwhelming to me too, but because of, you know, the state of things. And I mean, it's not a new thing that, you know, the amount of wars that are in the world, the amount of death, and the amount of struggle and strife that is continuously going on, and every day the pollution, the climate change, you know, oil, it just it goes on and on. So I'm wondering, like, what, how that enters into your world and how you're raising your children.
That is a beautiful question, and it enters my mind every day. Because I've chosen to live in Chico area, Paradise Chico area, and the kind of suburban America, and there's a lot that comes with that. I know that one significant piece I could add is that many years ago, maybe when the kids were, I don't know, they were young, and it just really hit me like a tidal wave, the grief of the state of the world and having children in it, and knowing that we're in, you know, fully in one of our next great extinctions, and that humans may not be, you know, on the planet for very much longer. Maybe they will, but maybe they won't. And what have I done by bringing two children into the world and not being, not knowing what their life course will be, and will it be filled with tragedy and chaos at some point because of the, you know, the Earth's health due to a lot of human impact. So I definitely had a lot of grief early on about that, thinking, yeah, of what their life might be like. And I wouldn't say I'm, like, past that per se, but my perspective on it now is, again, with my role of being a mentor of theirs, is how do I support them and give them a few tools for their toolkit, among with other folks, of how to be their own change agent in the world and how to have really good survival skills, and not just, like, how to, like, hunt and build a fire kind of survival skills, but community building, collaboration, keeping the ability to see the positive in things, being able to come up with solutions and ideas and innovations that they then know how to put into the practice in the world, so they can be a part of the emerging goodness that will hopefully happen alongside of a lot of the destruction that's happening. But I think that everydayness that comes into play is that all you have to do is turn on the news or some television or open a newspaper, and there is a lot to be sad and grief-ridden about. And so when my kids could start to read, and we chose not to have a TV, but we definitely listen to the news sometimes, and they see magazines at the checkout counter, and they see the TV and news at other places. Just like the overwhelmingness as a small child to be confronted with violence on and crime, and even at school, some kids not being nice, like, that's a reality that some kids face from the moment they come out of the womb, if they're in another country or even this country, that there's violence around them. But for my kids, it came a little bit later, and it's luckily for them not direct violence, but their experience of like, oh, this is how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's shootings and murders and people doing mean things to each other. Like, oh, that's just a part of how the world works. Like, that brings me deep sadness as a parent that they're seeing that reality of our modern society.
Absolutely. There's a short video that I want to play for everybody here, probably at the end of the show, and it talks a little bit about that because it's called Kid Warrior.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's about this young boy that is, you know, probably 12 or 13 and is making a I believe he's actually 14, but he is making quite the statement on the war on the climate and
mm-hmm.
getting a lot of attention for it. And he knows that he has a lot of power as a child
mm-hmm.
and power in the world's eyes and power against the corporations because of his innocence.
Yeah.
So it'll be a really inspiring video that I listened to earlier. So I'm excited to play that.
Yeah, that term warrior is helping them to be a peaceful warrior, not the warrior of power over, but power with. And, but also not wanting them to be super burdened by that just yet, because I think a true healthy child gets to have some love and vitality and peacefulness in their younger years to become fertile before they go into being really active in the world. If, you know, given again our privilege here and Chico in California and the U.S. and having education and, you know, paycheck, all that affords me to keep them having some of those things that other people don't have access to.
Right, absolutely. You brought up something important that I wanted to talk about, which was technology and access to media.
Mm-hmm.
So you already mentioned that you don't have a television and you don't really subscribe to a lot of those things that are maybe in the most modern families, like they have like either a TV or a computer, smartphones, and if they are using it, their kids are probably using it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reminded of something I read about Steve Jobs and how and his own children, and how he actually didn't let his own children utilize the technology that he created because he knew that it wasn't probably in their best interest because it would direct their mind in a certain way. And I think that this is really interesting in connection to what you're talking about with cultivating the wild in the child. Because if you're cultivating the wild, but yet there's this like kind of streamlining programming that's going on that comes through the mass media, then how much is it really the cultivation of the wild, and more so just the cultivation of what's already there?
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, how much technology, if there's technology, what your kind of view is around children and technology. I mean, we live in a technological world these days, so what's your take?
Yeah, I would say currently it's moderation and again, some gentle steering. While we don't have a TV, our kids certainly have access to technology. My husband and I have smartphones, and my son, who's 12, just saved up his money for the past year and bought a used MacBook because this started a few years ago. You know, of course, he was interested in technology. He sees it around. My husband and I have smartphones, and we have a computer at home. And he has cousins and aunts and uncles and friends that have things. And I thought, well, if he's going to use technology, can we support cultivating it in a way that he's not just receiving, that he's also creating with it? And he got interested in making stop motion videos. Like, so taking, he had Legos and he would make stop motion films, taking pictures of the Legos and then put it into a little film when he was like 7 or 8.
Oh, wow.
And then it's grown from there, and he actually makes movies. And so that's finding a way for him to interact with technology that's not just about sitting and watching a screen, which he does, you know, sometimes for sure, but also to use technology for good things. So whether it's learning something on Khan Academy, which you can learn anything that you want. He was interested in learning coding, so he learned about coding through Khan Academy, or no, through Code Academy. he wanted to learn some more math and some other things, so we found a website, the Khan Academy, that he learned some things. And then he mostly uses the technology to make movies with his friends and his sister. And so the other thing is, by not having a TV, I feel like we get to choose our media a little bit. So if they want to watch a movie, we choose the movie. Or there's some really inspiring young YouTubers out there, like Kid President and some other ones that have positive messages, and they're about, yeah, inspiration and motivation and change, or TED Talks, or This American Life, sometimes about storytelling. So we pick and choose most of the media together, and we have conversations about that, about how to choose the media. And then sometimes we let, you know, our rules down a little bit, because one of the things that they go to school and they also want to fit in with their peers. And so there's a certain amount of it, just a little bit, that we've allowed be, just as far as them having a sense of self in a peer group. But that's been pretty limited, because we don't want them to, you know, jump off the bridge just because everybody else is jumping off the bridge, kind of thing. And so we have that conversation. It's right. Okay to be unique and not do what everybody else is doing all the time.
Absolutely. So something else that was that came to mind that has been, like, you know, major threads on Facebook about is vaccines.
Mm.
And I'm curious what your take is on it, because I've had different conversations with parents about the vaccines, and just the recent information that I received was that there is a lot less restriction on what can get passed through the FDA as vaccines,
mm-hmm.
and it's required in it's required in public schools to be vaccinated. And so I'm learning that in certain charter schools and other in homeschooling, you don't have to vaccinate your children. So,
yeah, I think you can apply for a waiver.
Right. So I'm curious what your general view is on those things.
Yeah. Well, when my kids were born, we had just moved to Paradise, and we had no friends, and I actually didn't have a lot of friends that had kids at the time. So super new to it all, and didn't have a ton of coaching even from family members on different options. So we had both of our kids the minimum amount of vaccinations that they get. So they didn't get all of them. They just got the minimum that we thought that they could have. If I were to have kids now, I think I might make that choice differently. But it was just not necessarily knowing and just going along with the flow of things. Like they say, oh, give your baby a name, you know, mm-hmm. you know, have vaccinations. But the interesting thing is we're pretty low medical and the whole thing. I think my son's had antibiotics once in his 12 years, and my daughter, I'm not sure if she has it all. So I would say the vaccines was one of the last times we went to the doctor when they were really young.
Yeah.
And we've tried to go pretty low Western med since then, and they've been pretty healthy. So luckily we haven't had to use Western med too much and use some other alternatives for that. But I definitely think that people should have a choice, and have advocated that with the local laws that are going through the system right now. And I'm against having it be mandatory for all people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's bizarre sometimes to think about the world that we're living in and how much control is taken by mm-hmm. the government in terms of the children that are born and the requirements and how people tend to, you know, go along with what is being expected of them without necessarily questioning the mm-hmm. motives behind it. And I don't mean motives in a negative sense, but just I think with the amount of information that's available now about Western medicine and mm-hmm. that there is alternative medicine to prevent illness and to keep your immune system up, that information isn't as prevalent. And there's definitely good reason to wonder why the Western medicine is so kind of the way the mainstream wants things to be.
Yeah, there's good in all of it, and there's some downsides of all of it. So being able to have the choices is definitely a gift that we have, I would say, specifically in this area and in the U.S., for each family and each condition to find out what's the best combination of these options for this particular person in this case.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, it's interesting to think about how, you know, those two questions, recent questions that we just were talking about, you know, where we're at kind of in the state of the world, and then like just sort of new requirements and new laws that are coming up, how these things are all gonna meld together. And so I'm really happy to hear about the conversations that you're having with your children, and hopefully inspiring other parents out there to have these conversations with their kids, not necessarily about vaccines and war in the world, but just conversations, you know, keeping your kids, you know, in the loop. I think that one of the things that as a teacher that I was more aware of than some of the parents I was working with is how much your children do actually understand before you think that they understand it. And how most kids can have a conversation about a more, not maybe a super in-depth topic, but a really like full beginning to end conversation about the purpose of what is going on in their daily lives at a very young age. And so really being present to that with your children. I do want to get into rites of passage here soon and talk about some of the things that are upcoming in our community. But first, we're going to get some words from Mr. Jim Hightower.
President Obama is miffed that nearly all of his fellow Democrats in the U.S. House recently refused to follow him over the cliff of yet another global trade deal. But ironically, it was the core of his own argument that led Democrats to hand such an embarrassing and deserved defeat to him. Simply put, Obama pleaded, America has to write the rules of the 21st century economy in a way that benefits American workers. Nice sentiment, but simply put, the claim that his Trans-Pacific Partnership scheme would benefit American workers is a scam. Democratic lawmakers knew that America had not written the 1,000 pages of rules the president was pushing. In the secret, closed-door negotiating sessions, the tiny fraction of Americans allowed inside were such corporate powers as AT&T, GE, the Koch brothers, and Walmart. Workers themselves were not at the table, nor were consumers, small business, environmentalists, family farmers, and all the other real people who know from experience that the old saying is true. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Sure enough, the rules of the 21st century economy that Obama's TPP deal would impose on us is a raw deal, rigged against people for the benefit of global corporate interests. For example, the rules would raise our medicine prices, offshore more of our jobs, undermine our food safety and environmental protections, and even allow multinational corporations to usurp our people's sovereignty by suing the U.S. government in special corporate tribunals over laws and rules they don't like. This is Jim Hightower saying, Obama is mad at House Democrats, but people back home are furious at him for trying to sell us out. As Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi put it, when members went back to their districts, quote, we put our hand on a very hot stove of public opposition.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right, you are tuned into Love in the 21st Century, and we are talking about love and parenting with Miss Kelly Munson, and we do have a caller. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Laura Rivero Fisher.
Welcome, and Laura.
I'm a mother of two, and I have 4 grandchildren. I'm a grandmother, and I'm calling in as a grandmother.
Congratulations.
And, I just want to make one quick comment. You know, my husband and I met during the war in Vietnam, and we were activists, and we'd never bring children into the world. This was in the early 70s. And it's just so challenging, and I understand that challenge that people have of making a decision, both our children were planned. But I can say that the younger generation, it's quite unique, these children, and I believe they've come into this world to play a role in the transition into a healthier way of being on the planet, you know, and I've met so so many young people that are just absolute gifts to humanity. So that's my observation. And then the other thing, in terms of vaccines, which is the main reason I called in, I recommend a book that's called Dissolving the Illusion.
Dissolving the Illusion?
Yes, it's a very important book. It was just published, I believe, last year by Dr. MD, a female, Dr. Humphreys. I think it's Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, MD. And she worked in a hospital making over $300,000 a year and finally gave up her career because of what she learned working in hospitals. Her specialty is in kidney care. There's a term for it, but it's basically taking care of patients with kidney failure and kidney issues. And she finally realized that hospitals have a policy to vaccinate patients, and many of her patients were having reactions to the vaccines, and she told them, don't vaccinate my patients, I will decide that, you know, because their bodies can't handle it. That's why they're here at the hospital, they're very ill. So one thing led to another. She started doing research. It's like, what in the world is this about, you know? Hospitals don't force drugs down people's throats if they have allergic reactions to the drugs, but with vaccines, it's a different policy. So right. She wrote this book. It's extremely important because she authored the book with another person, a gentleman, I can't remember his name, and they took research and data from different parts of the world. It goes back to the 1700s, so it's like from health departments and statistical departments to gather information, and it's an expose on the vaccines. She, like most doctors and most everybody, believes vaccines have helped eradicate polio, etc. Well, turns out that's just really not the truth. They skewed numbers, they messed with the numbers, and the book is very hard to read. It's a hard read. It's really tough to read, but if you want to be educated on the topic, I can't think of a better book. I'm almost finished with the book. I cried a lot reading the book, and it's taken me like 4 months to read it because I can't take too much at any given time. But vaccine safety is where it's at. Okay, prove it. If they're safe, prove it to us.
Right, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. So Dissolving the Illusion by Dr. Suzanne Humphrey.
MD.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you so much. Hopefully some of our listeners are writing that down. I sure did.
Okay. Thanks for the great show.
Yes, our pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely an important topic, a very big topic right now, because I think that what maybe some people are unaware of, especially people that don't have children or, you know, don't have children yet, that it is these are laws that are being passed right now, that these are going to be requirements, so they're going to, that legally you have to vaccinate your children. And as our caller just mentioned, there's not as much research as we are led to believe about the successful use of them. So It's a good time to be questioning it and to be thinking about alternative options for putting your kids into public schools. I mean, or working with your schools. I can't stress enough the importance of parents working with their kids' schools to be a part of their education. I remember as being a kid, wanting my parent to be more involved. So if you have the inkling of, wanting to be involved with your kid's school, it's kind of a weird bureaucracy to have to get in the mix of when you're not having to be in the mix of it. But it's definitely worth it. You know, your kid spends more time probably in public school than they do anywhere else besides in your home. Mm-hmm. So, and most of the time in your home is probably sleeping. So.
Yeah.
So being a part of that, like having a role so that their friends know you, I think is an important component. So I want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned earlier that your kids are kind of going into that young adolescent stage and talking about rites of passage. So, you know, that's kind of like a focus that's kind of in your mind right now, is that they're transitioning into that period of their life. And we live in a culture that doesn't really honor or have or recognize rites of passages. So I'm wondering for you and your family how you've kind of looked at that opportunity in their lives.
Right. Well, our society has rites of passages, but they're more like drinking or having sex or, you know, starting your period or things that are not necessarily building someone's soul or their ego per se. And the work that I've done in the last many years is really looking at the different stages of a human's development, like a healthy human's development. And it shows that there's really 8 different significant passages that we could go through in our life, from early birth to early childhood to late childhood to early adolescence to late adolescence into early adulthood, late adulthood, and then early elderhood and late elderhood.
Absolutely.
Is this
Eric Erickson's?
No, this was Bill Plotkin's work,
okay,
Nature and the Human Soul, or the Soul-Centric Wheel. And so my kid, the first two, you know, coming into the world and the childhood one aren't necessarily significant, like coming of age ceremonies or rites of passage ceremonies that are in more traditional cultures. So we recognize our kids moving into this stage where we want a more formal, like coming into their authentic self in the world. So that is something that we are gaining support from other people with. It's not something I believe that just the parents should do, and ideally that we wouldn't actually be a part of, except for helping hand them off to other mentors that care about them and have skills. So we've been preparing them in different ways the last few years by, we'd like their rite of passage, coming of age, transition to be more nature-based, who they are in the context of the bigger, you know, universe. And so we have spent time with them outdoors for many years and being comfortable being outdoors and being on the land and being alone, sometimes in the dark or those kind of things. And we have taken them on trips with Ander, which is some girls, and with Avery, just some boys. And Avery will be going actually next weekend with 2 other dads and 2 other boys on a 4-day backpacking trip, just to kind of be in that zone and learn how to be out in the nature with himself and some peers. And we're also going on another family canoe trip later on this summer back east when we go visit some family back there. And yeah, getting them comfortable and skilled in how to be in somewhat of a warrior survival mode, that they can cook their own food or go to the bathroom in the woods or be out with animals and nature and under the sky. So we've been prepping them for that. And then with Ander, especially with the Weaving Women's Wisdom, it's a gathering that started last year that's held up in Concow. We're having our second annual one the end of September 25th, 26th, 27th, I believe, at the Concow campground. It's a multi-generational gathering of women, and wanting her to be supported in that context of having kids younger than her and kids older than her and young women and older women and people who identify as women all coming together to share the network of support in our community, and that she sees that I'm not the only one that cares about her, that there's many other people, and that she can get skills and teachings from, and even some discipline from, other folks that she has connections with. So building the bonds of connection with our kids to other adult mentors and peers, and then also preparing them for how to be okay and connected to nature. Those are 2 things that we're doing in preparation for their shift into a more formal rite of passage, which we hope that my son will do next summer and my daughter will do in a couple of years.
And so what does that correspond age-wise for your children?
So Avery will be 13 next summer. And then when Ander is about 12 and a half, 13, or when she starts bleeding or starting her moon cycle, we might do something more closer to that age, depending on when it comes.
Absolutely. So you did mention a bit about the Weaving Women's Wisdom and like the concept of community mm-hmm. that goes into these rites of passage. And I'm curious what, you know, I'm sure that part of the motivation to help create such a space comes from the fact of having two children that are going to be going into that mm-hmm. transition themselves. But how do you feel that that will sort of change the course of our community to have a rites of passage or a coming of age for, you know, for the children of our community and beyond? Like, what is the significance of bringing these practices back?
Well, I think it's huge because in my own personal view of doing a lot of this work professionally and then also in my own family and in the community, when we don't have those markers recognized and supported, and when we don't have mentors and we don't feel connected to our a greater community, the repercussion is, you know, isolation or anger or loneliness. And feeling a little lost. I work at the college, and so I see it all the time. Students that come there that they don't know what they're passionate about. They don't feel that connected to their community. They have strained relationships with their family, and they get into a little bit of a survival or this is how it is, so I'm just going to go with the flow. I think that the alternative is to have healthy markers that are recognized by family and friends or community or neighbors, that we show the children how that we see them, that we see you, we recognize you, we value you, we care about you, we're going to be here if you need us, and helping them, give them tests or support or love or teachings when those people see that the child is ready or about to be ready. So if we have a community of practice around raising children and support each other in those markers and giving the kids tests and affirmation at those different times, then the result is, you know, more like inner happiness and vitality and then cultivating them a sense of giving back to the community and a full aliveness and wanting to be truly helpful. So the rites of passage and just the way you consciously raise them is bringing out the natural attributes, the healthy attributes of humanness, and versus the shadow sides of humanness.
And what's coming to mind for me is thinking about, I just celebrated a birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And
happy belated birthday.
Thank you so much. And I created a ceremony around my birthday, a commitment ceremony to myself. And, you know, I went back and forth in my mind, like thinking about the rites of passage and the importance of community that you're bringing up. I think what comes to mind maybe is, what is the significance of having community be a part of your children's mm-hmm. rites of passage, or, you know, anybody's sort of coming of age or ceremonies in their life? And for me, it was really important to be witnessed. Mm-hmm. And to be witnessed because it holds you to something that is outside of yourself. And it's also something that, you know, it can be reflected back to you mm-hmm. from your community. And I like how you touched on that in our community, that the children can feel valued and important. And when we create this culture of coming of age with children, then they can begin to see themselves differently and see themselves the way that the adults in their lives see them, instead of just like the expectation, like, well, you're old enough now to understand these things, instead of just having that sort of mentality about their, you know, development. It's actually like giving them ownership and responsibility and authority over their sort of direction and their passions, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, imagine a world where every child is witnessed and their natural gifts that they come into the world with are recognized and cultivated, and then they're given a place in the community to use their strengths and their skills, and they feel really alive with feeling valued and needed, and like they're making a true contribution. I think that would look a lot different than a generation of folks sitting, you know, playing video games for 8 hours a day.
Absolutely. No questions asked. We're going to definitely have you on again to talk about Weaving Women's Wisdom, because we just don't have time tonight. But there's going to be another gathering that's coming up this weekend in Kalkau, which is the Sacred Movement Healing Arts and Music Festival. And it's June 26th through the June 28th. And this is another beautiful community that is bringing together that family vibe. It's there are a family of families. They treat each other like family, and they are, you know, four or five different families that come together to put this festival on. So it's definitely all about having the children around, creating a space that children feel welcome and safe and protected. Great music. There's going to be workshops and live art performances. And it's just going to be a good time to be celebrating with people in our community, people in our community that are trying to build a brighter world for our tomorrow, for our children and for ourselves. So if you have time, you can get day passes. KZFR is also a sponsor of the event, so you'll be supporting KZFR while supporting the Sacred Movement. And again, that is June 26th through the 28th. You can look it up, Sacred Movement Festival, sacredmovementmusicfestival.com, and check them out. And it'll be a good time to connect with some people in your community if you haven't had an opportunity to reach out and to see who else is out there, you know, kind of raising their kids in the, in this world today. You know, it's something that comes to my mind often about, you know, building an alliance between the parents and the kids and working together to build a community that we would like to see. As our caller mentioned, I also do view that, you know, the children that are being raised in the world today, that there's a lot of bright-eyed children that are, you know, that are coming up with solutions a lot younger than, you know, we've taken to get there. There's definitely been some radical inventions coming out of Africa, young girls that are developing generators out of urine. I mean, it's just, it's amazing, you know, what technology is right at your fingertips, what can come out. So I hope this conversation has inspired you to have some conversations with your kids, and also to think about what stage of development that they're in. Like, you know, what conversations, what transitions, what culture of rites of passage you'd like to have in their life. Because, yeah, that's the world we're living in. Thank you so much, Kelly, for joining me.
Thank you, Tammy. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. So, Ecotopia is coming up next. I'm going to leave you here with a beautiful song by a beautiful woman named Ealuz. It's called Ye Who Feels It.
Creator, Mother, Father, God, Goddess, bless this journey. She who feels it knows it, Lord. She who feels it knows it. She who feels it knows it, Lord. She who feels it knows it. I got the power in my body to heal anything that ails me. I got the power in my mind to redirect, reconnect, and redefine. I got the power in my spirit to accept it, release, and clear it. Nothing can weigh me down. Light overflows and love surrounds. Nothing can weigh me down. Light overflows and love surrounds me. And it feels like she who feels and knows it, Lord. She who feels She who feels and knows and loves. She who feels and knows, and you ain't gotta tell her. He who feels and knows and loves. He who feels and knows it. He who feels and knows and loves. He who feels and knows it. And we got the power.